Since tonight is our last evening together, our last talk, we thought that we would continue the theme of wisdom and compassion, exploring in a little more detail about how they are interrelated, two sides of a coin, as Pam said last night. And the way we're going to do this is we're going to split the talk. So I'm going to talk for a little while, and then Pam's going to talk for a little while. So as we get more and more familiar with our experience in meditation, we really start to recognize, as Pam pointed to, I think, this morning. No, this was last night. She pointed to this last night, how much of what we meet in our experience doesn't just apply to ourselves. It's universal. That we see our experience and we recognize in the seeing of it that it is not just ourselves who are suffering. The patterns are so clearly universal. And so we open to this more universal aspect of our experience. And it's this universal aspect that is the liberating aspect. And this is what Vipassana is. In fact, the term Vipassana, my teacher Upandita says that the term Vipassana, broken into two parts, he breaks it into more parts, but he spent apparently 2 weeks talking about the pa part of Vipassana, what that means. I'm not going to do that. So the V part, the first part of the term, basically means something like various things. And the pasana part means to see clearly, to meet clearly. So vipassana, I guess literally translated, means something like to clearly meet various things. And Upandita said that the various things that it's referring to are these universal aspects of our experience. Not the specific things that we see, not our own psychology, but the universal aspects. So tonight I'd like to explore one of those universal aspects in some depth. The other night I talked a lot about the dukkha aspect of universal experience, that is, we see as we meet our experience that how we suffer isn't unique to us. Yeah, the specifics of how we bring in our history and our conditioning is unique to us, but the unfolding of the pattern, of the wanting things to be other than they are, and seeing how the suffering results from that, we clearly see how universal that is. I talked about the dukkha aspect of that universal understanding. Tonight I'd like to talk about impermanence. So this exploration of impermanence actually points to another area of this radical shift that the Buddha pointed to, that we need to just completely shift our perspective on our experience. As he realized, actually, that we impute permanence to our experience and to things in the world. And that this is actually a great source of our suffering. This kind of this, there's a, we have this delusion that we take things to be permanent where they're not permanent, but this delusion is really masked from our vision because we think we know that things change. I mean, you ask anybody, that things change or things impermanent, and they'll say, yes, things are impermanent. I mean, it's obvious. You start looking around, you know, people are born and they die. The seasons change. So there's some way in which it's obvious that things change. And yet, the profoundness of this truth doesn't touch us, and we behave as though things were permanent. So this delusion, we have this delusion around how we engage with the world. And this delusion is kind of masked around impermanence. In particular, this delusion is masked because we think we understand that things are impermanent. On the surface of things, we seem to understand that. There's a beautiful story from the Mahabharata, which is an Indian epic poem story. And at one part of this story, there are some brothers that are in the wilderness, and they're undergoing a kind of a test of sorts. And they come to this pond, and they're very thirsty. It's kind of, they were in a desert, and they come to this pond, and they want to drink from this pond, but this voice speaks to them from out of the ether and says, wait, you have to answer a question before you drink from this pond. And the first two brothers can't wait, and they just drink from the pond, and then they die. And the third brother, who's a little more intelligent, stops and listens to this voice, and the voice asks him, what is the greatest wonder? And here's his response. This, I think, is most wonderful, that the man of the world, even though he is seeing before his eyes constantly creatures dying and passing away, never for a moment the idea enters him, I too have to fall. I am also a creature destined to be destroyed. Even if it is told to him, it never enters his mind. Only the surface mind understands the language, but the actual sense never goes into his head. This, that every man one day must die, yet every man lives as if they were mortal, immortal. That every man one day must die, yet every man lives as if they were immortal. This is the greatest wonder. That this is the way we are. I mean, it is so true. I think we all can see the truth of it in how we engage. Only the surface mind understands, but the actual sense of it never goes into our heads. There's a poem expressing a kind of a similar sentiment. The name of the poem is called The Niagara River by Kay Ryan. As though the river were a floor, we position our table and chairs upon it, eat, and have conversation. As it moves along, we notice, as calmly as though dining room paintings were being replaced, the changing scene along the shore. We do know. We do know. This is the Niagara River. But it is hard to remember what this means. So in terms of this understanding of impermanence, there are two kind of levels to explore. There's the obvious level of impermanence, what's clear to us in our day-to-day life, what we can see, beings being born and dying, change of seasons. And then there's a more subtle level, a transformation that happens moment to moment. that is more, it is obscured from us. It is not something that is easily seen, and it usually takes a meditative mind to be able to penetrate this more subtle level of impermanence. So I'd like to talk about each of these a little bit. So this kind of more obvious level of impermanence. Again, this is the level that we understand. It's like the Niagara River. We do know. It's the Niagara River. We're putting our table and chairs on the Niagara River, destined to go over the waterfall. But the meaning of it, just, it doesn't quite hit us. Sometimes it can kind of penetrate a little bit, for a little while. I remember right after the tsunami, the massive tsunami, you know, I don't know, 200,000 people or more died in the space of a couple of hours. That really hit me. But, you know, I forgot about it. You know, it kind of really hit me for a short time. Oh, that could have been me. You know, I actually knew some people who were in Thailand at the time, and they were in the tsunami. So, you know, for a short period of time, these kind of cataclysmic events can kind of penetrate us, and we think, oh, yeah, this can happen. This kind of thing can happen, and we never know when it's going to happen. But that memory of that doesn't last very long. It doesn't really alter us deeply. So why is it important to take in the actual sense of impermanence? To actually allow the profoundness of this truth to penetrate? Partly it's because of the very strong connection, the relationship between dukkha and impermanence. Actually, much of our suffering is a direct result of not deeply understanding this truth of impermanence. As I said the other day, that our usual way of finding happiness, of putting things together to arrange our world such that it's, you know, the way we like it, to have people who have opinions that we like about us. This is relying on things that we don't have much control over. And partly the reason we don't have much control over them is because they're impermanent. They won't last. Rainer Maria Rilke speaks to this connection between impermanence and a sense of unsatisfactoriness, unreliability. We could think of unreliability, unsatisfactoriness as another translation for dukkha. So Rainer Maria Rilke speaks to this in one of his poems. And we, spectators, always, everywhere, turned toward the world of objects. It fills us. We arrange it. It breaks down. We rearrange it, then break down ourselves. Who has twisted us around like this so that no matter what we do, we are always in the posture of someone going away? Just as upon the furthest hill, which shows him his whole valley one last time, he turns, stops, lingers. So we live here, forever taking leave. Not seeing this truth of impermanence, we fundamentally misunderstand how to be happy. We think we can be happy by making these arrangements, not understanding the truth of impermanence. As we see this truth of impermanence deeply, the mind begins to reorient around what would actually make us happy. The letting go is what makes us happy. One of the most profound ways to take in the actuality of this kind of obvious level of impermanence is to regularly contemplate. There's a teaching that the Buddha suggests, 5 subjects for frequent recollection. They're great recollections for us. He really suggests, recollect these daily. Think about these daily. 4 of the 5 have to do with impermanence. I am of the nature to age. I have not gone beyond aging. I am of the nature to sicken. I have not gone beyond sickness. I am of the nature to die. I have not gone beyond dying. All that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will become otherwise, will become separated from me. The 5th one is a reflection about the truth of cause and effect, the truth of karma, which is not the subject of tonight's talk, so I won't go into that one. So reflecting on these regularly, spending some time daily reflecting on this, just reminding yourself, I'm of the nature to age, I'm of the nature to sicken, I'm of the nature to die. This supports a meeting of this truth of impermanence at this obvious level. And highlighting, in fact, the truth around dying. That you will die, that all of your loved ones will die. And as Carlos Castaneda once told somebody who was kind of complaining to him, I don't have a spiritual life, what should I do? He said, reflect every day that you and everyone you love will die in no particular order, at any time at all. Soon you'll have a spiritual life. It's a powerful reflection. The Buddha says, many do not realize that we here must die. For those who realize this, quarrels end. One of my friends, students, Sangha member, is dying right now. He's had cancer for some time, and he's decided to stop the treatment, and he's in hospice, and he's going through his process of dying. And it's really quite an inspiration to be around him. He's a practitioner. He is very devoted to the practice. And I feel so strongly how this meeting of death, and he is meeting it unflinchingly, completely unflinchingly. This meeting of this truth that he is going to die and soon is stripping away all the pettiness of his life and orienting him around what is most important. It is so clear that's how he's living his life right now. It's quite inspiring and beautiful to see. He posted a poem to his blog, which I'll share with you. It's called The Daikini Speaks by Jennifer Wellwood. Apparently he heard it first on the last retreat he went to, which was, well, not the last retreat. He did the month-long at Spirit Rock in February, and this poem was apparently shared there. So the Daikini speaks. My friends, let's grow up. Let's stop pretending we don't know the deal here. Or, if we truly haven't noticed, let's wake up and notice. Look, everything that can be lost will be lost. It's simple. How could we have missed it for so long? Let's grieve our losses fully like ripe human beings. But please, let's not be so shocked by them. Let's not act so betrayed, as though life had broken her secret promise to us. Impermanence is life's only promise to us, and she keeps it with ruthless impeccability. To a child, she seems cruel, but she is only wild, and her compassion is exquisitely precise. Brilliantly penetrating, luminous with truth, she strips away the unreal to show us the real. This is the true ride. Let's give ourselves to it. Let's stop making deals for a safe passage. There isn't one anyway, and the cost is too high. We're not children anymore. The true human adult gives everything for what cannot be lost. Let's dance the wild dance of no hope. So when we start to take in this truth of impermanence, you know, on the surface of it, it seems like it would be depressing. But as I think my experience, my story about my friend who's dying now shows, you know, he's not experiencing it as depressing. He's actually really living his life. He is dancing the wild dance of no hope right now, fully engaged. And I wouldn't call him depressed. He's actually, he has good days and bad days, but when he has good days, he's having fun. So this impact of the truth of impermanence can actually open our hearts. It opens us to this other side, this other wing. The truth of impermanence, this is a wisdom truth. Directly connected, the seeing of this truth to opening to compassion. Seeing this truth, we act from what is more important to us. We connect with our priorities. Living life in line with our priorities, we have less to regret. And compassion can arise because we see this truth of impermanence is universal. We clearly see when we open our eyes to this truth, it's not personal. Impermanence has nothing to do with us personally. It is just the way it is. Don Juan said to Carlos Castaneda, "There's a strange consuming happiness in acting with the full knowledge that whatever one is doing may very well be one's last act on earth. I recommend that you reconsider your life and bring it into your acts into that light." So at a more subtle level, there is possible to see through our meditation, through our practice of mindfulness, the rapidity of change. And it's not just beings born and dying. It's actually moment to moment. There is nothing reliable to hold on to. Everything is changing so rapidly that there's actually nothing that we can hold on to for any more than a split second. As Pam mentioned this morning, we start to touch into this aspect as we see our minds go through so many different mind states in the course of a day, or in the course of an hour, or even in the course of a few minutes. It's quite amazing when the mind settles in to see how it just goes from boredom to interest to confusion to, wow, what's going on? And beginning to see how, you know, you can see how you're identified with each of those states, and it's like, wow, none of those have anything to do with each other. So we really start to see the impermanence of our identification, and what seemed so important a minute ago is now gone. So this truth of the kind of rapidity of change is masked, in fact, by its very rapidity. This truth of this subtle impermanence is masked because things are changing so rapidly. It's kind of like if you take a fire stick, you know, stick with a fire on the end of it, and put it in a circle, you'll see a kind of continuous circle, because you know there's a kind of a persistence of what you see. So it's moving rapidly, and because it's moving rapidly, it creates the illusion of something solid, a solid circle of fire. It's kind of like that with our experience. Deeply seeing this level of impermanence leads us to freedom and compassion. As we see this truth, as we see things changing so rapidly like that, partly what we start to see too is that, you know, as we watch our own minds creating things and clinging to things, and we see that what we're actually clinging to is nothing more than something flitting through our mind. All that we experience is just a creation inside our minds. And there's things out there. I'm not saying there's not things out there, but our experience of them is entirely created in our minds. And what we cling to is that which is created in our minds. And we start to see how rapidly our minds are changing. We really see there isn't actually anything to cling to. No wonder we suffer so much when we try to cling. I'll finish my part of this with a poem. This human body, at peace with itself, is more precious than the rarest gem. Cherish your body. It is yours this one time only. The human form is one with difficulty. It is easy to lose. All worldly things are brief, like lightning in the sky. This life, you must know, is the tiny splash of a raindrop, a thing of beauty that passes away even as it comes into being. Therefore, set your goal and make every day and night a time to attain it. Treasure the time you have been given, for this is all that matters.